There's the big board, the 20 electoral votes from the state of Pennsylvania. We just got new metrics in.
The inauguration of a president celebrates a peaceful transition of power engineered by the American voters.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, listeners. Welcome back to the 45th podcast. This is Rabia Chaudhry. I'm an attorney and author, and I'm here, as always, with my co-host, Susan Simpson. Hey, Susan.
Hey, Rabia.
How are you doing?
Not too bad.
So, you know, last week was interesting. Last week was, I think, the 65th week of this administration. And
who's counting?
This is one of the weeks where there was a lot of crazy, like, smaller stories, but not like a... Well, in a way, you could argue that any one of them is like a big story in a normal news cycle, like normal administration. But with this administration, a lot of it was a lot of crazy little stuff and nothing really big happened.
Well, and coincidentally, we got an email this week from a listener. And Derek Stanley suggested that we start a weekly feature called the This Week's Trumpster Fire, in which we...
Isn't it all a Trumpster Fire,
it
though?
It is all a Trumpster Fire, but this I feel like would be a good way for us to go over a lot of the smaller stuff that's not really worth like getting into depth, but like worth a recap on, just so it's not totally forgotten the incident happens.
All right. Sounds good. Let's start the Trumpster Fire. Where do you want to start?
Yeah, so I kept a running list this week.
Okay, good.
I probably didn't update it enough because there's always so much, but here's the things that I...
You know, by the way, I'm looking at your list and I've actually forgotten about some of this stuff already. I did, so...
And my first entry was just his hair, oh dear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. If you guys haven't seen this video, please hop online and look for it. It is a video of... Trump walking up, you know, the steps to Air Force One, windy day, not a good time for him. He should definitely wear a hat when he, but his hair flew up in the back. And I actually gasped when I saw it because I did not expect to see what I saw. Can you describe it, Susan?
His hair is essentially like a lion's mane and it's like a fringe around the outside that he swoops back to cover. Basically, the back is entirely bald and it's kind of a... I had an audible reaction as well. It's pretty horrifying to see it.
I kept thinking, is this doctored? It's not doctored. But, I have to say, though, considering how bald it is in the back, like, and it's not even, look.
Entirely bald.
It's not even about, we all have men in our lives who don't have, there's nothing wrong with that.
It's not the baldness is the problem.
It's the vanity, right?
Well, it's the way it looks. Fakeness. It looks really shocking. It looks like a burn victim, kind of. Which is
kind of weird.
Yeah.
He does a good job of covering it up, I guess, on normal day. I mean, his hair looks weird, but I never would have expected that situation back there. It is so, it is such a Trump thing.
Party on the fringe, nothing at all in the back.
It's a real Trump move for that level of fake out to happen. So good job, President, but we have now uncovered your secret.
We have now looked into the...
Looked into the void. Luckily, Voldemort did not look back at us. So
it kind of did. I don't know.
Right, well, look that video up if you guys haven't seen it. It's worth the watch. What next?
So we also have Trump later in the week calling for a government shutdown if he didn't get his wall.
You know, this time I just was like, whatever.
Everyone else was too. Like, I'm not, you know, normally that would be a big deal. Everyone's like, whatever. And it turns out we did have a shutdown. I think it was in like some late night hours that I was fuzzily trying to keep track of and then said, screw it.
I can't even imagine what government employees are going through trying to figure out what the hell. Do they go in? Do they not go?
Yeah. What did they do that night? Did they have to like stay up and like, I gave up. I'm like, this is going, I'm so over this.
Yeah, I didn't give a shit.
But if you had work the next day, what do you do?
Show up just in case, I guess.
This is a bigger entry. It probably shouldn't go in the Trumpster Fire, but there's no real updates at the immediate moment. But DACA is still pending. There's no resolution there, and the deadline is rapidly approaching.
Yeah, and Speaker Pelosi made a heroic effort last week. I think she spent 9 hours on the floor advocating for DACA.
Longest House speech in history by quite a lot.
Yeah, I didn't understand how... They thought, I mean, I think it was great. And I think it was important symbolically. I think it was important also to show solidarity with the people who are like, you know, going to be impacted by this. But I really didn't understand how this was going to have a real impact. So, but good for her.
I mean, we'll see what happens. Of course, Trump keeps tweeting about it. we'll see what happens. I mean, the problem is, I don't really blame the Democrats necessarily because, I mean, what they did, it's not that they had much to do with, they had very few options here anyway in the first place. They're now out of leverage, though. It's unclear how they're going to get DACA through, or if they will.
Well, I mean, like, their DACA would, I'm guessing they would have to meet him somewhere on that deal. I mean, now, I mean, Trump, you know, outlined his little four-pillar immigration plan in State of the Union. And I think just a couple days ago, I think in the House or Senate, I can't remember. I think it's in the House, but GOP unveiled their plan to, like, basically make that happen. They eliminated, you know, all sibling and parent sponsorships in it, did the 1.8 million folks to citizenship path. I mean, so that is one way to resolve DACA, is to just get them out of DACA, basically, and put them in a more permanent. You know, DACA is also a temporary fix. It's a 2-year, it's a deferred program. It's not a permanent fix. So Dems have to figure out whether or not the diversity program and the family reunification stuff is enough for them to say, nope, we're not going to take this deal.
See, I still don't even think it's necessarily a given that even if they gave concessions and everything, the GOP could pull the votes together.
That's true. They'd need, what, 60 votes? I think they could, though. I think they could. But I do think that, like criminal justice reform, immigration reform has been something that's been, you know, with slightly different interests, but it's been mostly kind of like there's been bipartisan support for it in the last decade or so.
It has 87% approval. It shouldn't even be on the table. Like, it should be a done deal long since, if we are in a functional representative democracy.
But, you know, I just read this morning something that's horrifying. I mean, there's so much news that comes out about immigration, or maybe it's always on my radar because, you know, it's something I think about and have worked in, which is a story that came out in The Intercept called the school to ICE pipeline. I mean, we've heard about the school to prison pipeline, and this is, like, so incredibly alarming. So apparently what's happening, and there's a lot of schools that have, like, school marshals or police, some kind of police, like law enforcement presence on the grounds. And so what's happened numerous times is, like, these young guys who are, like, Latino guys, if a teacher administrator thinks they might be, like, wearing a color that's suspiciously gang related or acting suspicious, they can put them in some kind of do something, you know, either suspend them or do some kind of administrative process, you know, like, whatever, something administrative to them, or just to kind of report them to the officer to keep an eye out, because some of these gangs, like MI-13, they're dangerous. And so that has resulted in, like, kids in high school being, like, reported by these school marshals to ICE and then being picked up and put in removal. And that's kind of crazy. If you imagine you're a kid in school and you don't know what's going to, like, set off any kind of alarm for somebody, a student could report you. Anybody could report you and say, I think this kid is suspicious. I think he might be undocumented. I think he'd be part of a gang. This is a big problem.
Yeah. Well, hopefully I'm being pessimistic and everyone will get back together and figure out something soon.
I mean, this is the kind of thing, to me, I feel like you need you need some legal action to prevent schools from doing this. There's absolutely no reason any kind of law enforcement needs to find out about any kid's immigration status or an administrative violation. If they violate school policy, that's not local law enforcement's problem.
Well, it looks like they're trying to expand their sphere of influence, I guess you'd say, to basically anywhere. Courts are now allowed, they're now picking up people there, obviously. Schools, fathers dropping off kids at schools is now their favorite target.
Yeah. ICE detentions are up 87%.
And I saw that they were actually asking to be considered part of the, like, our intelligence community, which they're not currently. And hopefully that's not going anywhere.
Well, I mean, maybe not in an official capacity, but there have been JTTS, with their Joint Terrorism Task Forces, in which, yeah, they've been working, like, all kinds of agency people have been working together on different issues. But Trump is turning this into a national security issue with the gang stuff. And that's probably where that push is coming from. You'd never turn down free money, right? Well, if you shop online without the best coupons, you are already paying too much. But fortunately, there's a free browser extension called Honey that automatically finds the best coupons on the entire web, so you always get the best prices on everything online.
Trying to find coupons that you're using is hard, and also sometimes you want to buy something without worrying about hunting down coupons first, which is where Honey comes in. With two clicks, you can install it on any browser for free. And then you just shop like you usually do.
What Honey does is they will scan and test millions of coupons in the background while you're shopping, so that when you check out, Honey will automatically apply the best coupon to get you the biggest discount.
Don't have to worry about it, it's done for you. And over 7 million people use Honey every day. Together, they've saved millions of dollars shopping online.
I buy a lot of baby stuff online because, you know, I've got a baby and it's easier to have stuff shipped to me. So I've been using Honey to do a lot of my baby shopping, you know, whether it's clothing, whether it's baby items, and I end up finding coupons between 10 to 20% off routinely.
And it's super easy to use. You just install it and it'll pop in Chrome and you're good to go.
It's free. It takes seconds to install, save you tons of money. So add Honey to your browser for free right now. This is how you do it. You go to joinhoney.com/45. That's joinhoney.com/45.
So this weekend was gross and rainy, which unfortunately for our commander-in-chief meant he can't golf like he usually likes to do on the weekends. So instead he stayed in and tweeted batshit crazy stuff all weekend.
I wonder if he was in a robe the whole time.
I hope he was at least in a robe.
At least.
And it was.
I totally didn't follow. I did not follow him on Twitter this weekend, so I don't know what he was up to. I just couldn't.
Well, you're better off. Let's see some of this weekend's craziness. The only one I was like on Twitter for is I saw one he wrote, and then it was a halfway tweet, so maybe like the dot 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 thing. And like 15, 20 minutes later, I checked back to see what I was going to actually say. Still no response. I don't know how long it took him in the end, but like it was a good 20 minutes before he finally, at least before he finished it.
Maybe somebody interrupted him, like Kelly or somebody. Like, give me that
phone.
It's
my executive time. Go away. So, yeah, he decided to talk about DACA and how Republicans want to fix it far more than the Democrats do. And then had some like crazy, like, it's hard to be more factually incorrect than the rest of this. He said that Dems had all three branches of government back in 2008 to 2011, and they decided not to do anything about DACA. They only want to use it as a campaign issue. Vote Republican. Like, no, that's not the correct time in which Democrats had all three branches. There was no DACA at the time. That was 2012. And obviously Republicans are the reason there was no DACA passed then.
Yep. All of it's wrong. Every single line.
Yeah. Like it's hard to be that wrong. And even expanded tweet form with 280 characters, it's hard to get that much wrong
talent.
In a tweet.
It takes talent.
Yeah. And then he had here's the one that took like forever and a day for him to finish. My view is that not only has Trump been vindicated in the last several weeks about the mishandling of the dossier and the lies about the Clinton/DNC dossier, it shows that he's been victimized. He's been victimized by the Obama administration, who are using all sorts of agencies, not just the FBI and DOJ, now the State Department, to dig up dirt on him in the days leading up to the election. Comey had conversations with Donald Trump, which I don't believe were accurate. He leaked information, /corrupt.
Wow.
And he's quoting Tom Fitton from Digital Watch. Apparently it was on Fox News.
A lot happened this weekend. I did not realize he was that.
Yeah, so Trump is literally accusing his own executive agencies of plotting against him. Keep in mind, Comey stuff was happening after he was inaugurated. This is his own executive branch that he oversees as President of the United States. He's accusing him of plotting against him. That's how...
Deep state.
Off the deep end.
Yep.
This is crazy. Like, and if people didn't just totally accept that Trump is crazy, this would be like a crisis point already. But everyone knows he's nuts, so it doesn't get as much attention as maybe it should. But the president's calling himself a victim. Like, that's... I can't imagine. I'm trying to think of another example of that. Like, when has a president, like, announced, I'm being victimized by another political... my predecessor, in this case?
I mean, he's already said it's the greatest witch hunt this country has ever seen, notwithstanding the actual witch hunts. But...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's just... everything's just like, okay... I mean, it's nothing, and I think that's where I'm headed. I'm like, not a lot makes me flinch anymore. Not a lot makes me, and I think that's alarming too.
Yeah. Well, we also, this week, Trump announced he would not be releasing the Democratic version of, quote unquote, the memo.
That pissed me off.
Which is not surprising. I mean, it was obviously going to happen that way. And he doesn't actually have the power to stop it. It now goes back to the House and they vote. So we'll see what they do.
Well, he didn't declassify it. And he also said that it's overly political and too long. It's 10 pages long, dude. It is 10 pages long. Yeah. There are long form essays online like that are longer.
Yeah, there was...
To me, that means he didn't read it. He could not read 10 pages.
Of course he didn't read it. He can't... Like, he doesn't read anything. We now know that Trump does not get at all a written PDB, Presidential Daily Briefing. He only gets the verbal form because he can't read.
You know what I wonder, okay, about that? Do you think, is it that there is a written briefing and then they brief him orally on it? Or they're just dispensing with anything in writing? Because if they're dispensing with anything in writing, That's an issue. There's no record of what is happening during these briefings.
Oh, no, it's in writing. We know that because Kushner is reading it every day.
He should not be because he doesn't have the clearance probably to read this shit. But
yeah. Oh, Trump also announced he wants to have a parade.
I forgot about that. Oh, my Lord. I
totally forgot. Someone, you can tell someone in the Department of Defense, like, leaked this shit to shut it down. They're like, dear God, I'm out of options. Maybe if I make, if the world knows what's going on, maybe at least this one thing, we can stop.
Well, apparently, can they stop it, though? I know, I think Congress or some Democrats introduced a bill to stop basically to stop this, but I can't remember what it was called, but it was to stop spending. Like, that's, like, just ridiculous spending on things like this, excesses like this. Speaking of which, I don't know if you saw today, but the Trump basically has given up on even trying to, like, this year's budget, they're going to borrow almost twice as much as they did last year.
It's going to be $1 trillion a year, if it's under, I mean, again, it's just his proposed budget.
So. Yeah, so for, you know, he's got to pay for, like, parades and shit, so.
Given that he was bragging that he would be able to get rid of the $19 trillion like deficit or something
during
8 years, he's now adding $1 trillion to it per year.
Yeah, they're like, no, that's not going to happen.
So we also had, I think we're in Infrastructure Week again. It's hard to tell. I think it's like always and never Infrastructure Week. he's now making a push, though, to try and,
like,
get his...
the fourth time we've had Infrastructure Week, but nothing actually ever happened related to
this time he's going to do something, he swears. He's going to give us a proposal to, you know, privatize the country and pay off all of his cronies. We also had... Omarosa is now on Big Brother. I have not watched it. I have seen some quotes. Apparently, she is now saying it's that she lived in dread of the Trump tweets and how it's not going to be okay. And, not disagreeing with you, I'm just not believing you there. Sorry, Omarosa. We also had, did you hear this one? The whole, like, Warner Russia text thing that briefly went up and then fizzled again.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah.
Their news attempted big scandal. So we also know, though, a week ago, we had, when, I still don't know what happened there. For some reason, Hannity's Twitter went down or something. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so there's a fake Hannity Twitter someone started. With some woman in Texas, and while she was running it, she got a DM, a Twitter direct message from Julian Assange, who was saying, I've got some info on Warner for you. Mm-hmm.
That guy's an idiot. I mean, like, this is not the first time he has messaged people, like, who he should not be messaging about stuff. For some reason, he thinks DMs are appropriate for this.
I mean, I guess he probably knows everything he does is watched anyway, so, like, it doesn't really matter what channel he uses at this point.
I guess.
But, of course, right on clockwork, Hannity has a story about Warner and some texts he did back in, like, I think it was April or March or something. And the way they styled the story was, like, as if he was texting, like, or communicating directly with Oleg Deripaska, which is, you know, Manafort's oligarch buddy, about this. But really, it was texting a lobbyist who once worked for Deripaska and were trying to find steel. Apparently, this was done as, like, a bipartisan effort from the Senate Intelligence Committee. Burr, the Republican, who's the chair, knew about it, kept a part of it. And, in fact, the entire Intelligence Committee was informed about these texts October, I think. So not a thing at all. Like, it's nothing. It was a very legitimate attempt to buy the group that's investigating the Russian matter to get in touch with Steele. So whatever. They try to portray this like a big new scandal and kind of fizzled because, for once, Republicans wouldn't get on board. I think it was Rubio who, like, tweeted out, like, y'all, chill, ain't nothing here.
But I don't know if that would actually prevent Hannity from still taking it and running with it. I mean, he didn't care. That's
He tried. He did. Yeah. It just didn't get much traction elsewhere. Yeah. next on my list, I think I wrote this late at night. It's the CIA's PP tape buyback program.
Yeah. They sunk a lot of money into it.
Yeah, and they didn't want the PP tape, which is because of obvious reasons. That was not great for their future careers. So if you didn't hear the story, it's worth reading. There's two stories from The Intercept, New York Times covering it. Essentially, an attempt to find out what all was taken from, like, their tech arsenal. I don't know the proper terms. I'm not going to pretend to use them. But they're, like, their little hacker tools. They're really important to them. They were stolen. Shadow brokers have them. They want a copy to figure out, like, what was stolen and, you know, and know exactly what got compromised. So the CIA was trying to buy this copy for, like, initially the offer was, like, millions, and it was, like, $100,000 or $1 million. And So they try and buy those tools back to see what they have. And this Russian business guy they're working with gives them apparently only publicly available stuff. So it's not what they're looking for. It's not a real bank. But he also says, like, oh, by the way, look what I have here. All this, like, dirt on Trump.
Right.
You want to see this? And CIA is like, nope, that's cool. Can you give us our, like, hacker tools back? and he's like, well, I've got some hacker tools here, but really, don't you want to watch this tape? So apparently at some point in the Berlin embassy, CIA agents met with this Russian businessman, and he showed them a 15-second clip of, like, the prelude, he claimed, to the PP tape.
Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely not real. There's not a chance.
Oh, darn.
So, I mean, for a lot of reasons. One, it's pretty much certainly, like, disinfo and fake and not the real PP tape, so who wants it? Mm-hmm. It's also not the CIA's job to spy on Americans, let alone the president. So eventually the whole deal got squashed.
Okay.
So that's a Trumpster fire. The quick recap of all the craziness that went on.
So there were a spate of resignations that took place across the administration last week. It was busy, busy. A lot of turnover.
A lot of promotions.
I guess so.
No, he did an announcement. He's like promoting like 30 people at once.
Yeah, that is true too. Rachel Brandt, who was third highest ranking official.
Third in line
official.
At DOJ.
Yeah, at DOJ.
And next in line for the Russian investigation.
Right under Rod Rosenstein. She resigned after only having been confirmed 9 months ago to the position to take a job at Walmart, which is probably a good career move considering where the Russian investigation is going. But, you know, she could have...
Well, I mean, it's interesting that she doesn't, like, apparently, like, normally you think someone would want that. Like, that's a big...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Your resume.
It would be historic, right? It would be historic, yeah.
Apparently she wants no part of it.
Makes you wonder. And then you have Kelly's chief of staff, Jim Carroll. He resigned, but he was apparently, that was already in the works, so it wasn't in response to anything that was happening lately. But, you know, I mean, like, this is a year, this is like, they've only been around for a year at the most. I don't even think this guy didn't even complete like a whole year term, I think. Stephen Miller's speechwriter, David Sorensen, resigned because of abuse allegations. His ex-wife said he physically abused me. And then the big story was, of course, Rob Porter, who was a Trump aide and has been in all kinds of positions handling all kinds of even classified information and being like that person who passes on information to Trump. He resigned because two ex-wives, and I'm not going to say they're allegations. These are actual facts. They were physically abused by him. There are photographs of them being beaten in a black and blue. And the White House has known this, you know, McGahn.
Yeah, this whole story is even for, I mean, you were saying earlier, like it's hard to even like, cringe over the shit that happens now, but this one for me,
it was pretty cringe
for a lot of people, was a gut punch because it's just so like god awful in so many ways and just never ending incompetence and horrible people doing horrible things that it finally made a dent in a way that a lot of stories that, you know, have equal or worse behaviors involved didn't quite catch on.
I'm actually surprised given how, like, you know, everybody circled the bandwagon around him because everybody did. McGahn has known for a year about the abuse. Kelly publicly said, I hope he doesn't resign and he stays and fights. He actually used that word. Orrin Hatch said the same thing. Trump was like, he's a good guy. These are allegations. People can say, he tweeted something like people can say anything. And I feel like if this guy wanted to stay, he could have just probably done it.
The timelines of what happened when still kind of dispute because they're all terrible fucking liars. And it's pretty clear, though, that one of the biggest liars here was John Kelly.
Yeah.
You know, the honorable general is lying to cover up someone he wants to stay in the White House is a chronic domestic abuser.
Yeah.
Eventually, the photos came out and like the out. Like, so I feel like this is probably one of the few lines that like we are somehow as a society, we're 90% there unified behind the idea that domestic violence or spousal abuse is wrong.
Mm.
It happens a lot. It's very common. It's not like by any means out of our culture, but there's general agreement that it's a bad thing. And people who do that and can't get clearances because of it don't need to be around the kind of work they're doing. So to see them not only know that this guy was doing this, then like try and cover it up and then lie and claim they weren't covering it up.
Mm.
People were upset. And to make it, I guess, worse, Rob Porter currently has a girlfriend,
mm-hmm.
Hope Hicks.
Yeah, that's interesting to me that she would be willing to date a guy who, I'm sure she knows about this stuff too. Of course she, I mean,
even
before
she was involved in the response to it.
Yeah, even before she went. Well,
so
I mean,
she's now dated two different people in the Trump campaign administration who were terminated for violence against women.
Interesting.
Lewandowski, too.
That's right. That's right.
Who also is now involved in a sexual harassment scandal against Joy Villa, the Trump supporter, singer, person.
Oh, God.
I don't really know who she is still.
God. Well, one of the other issues attached to this is the fact that because of this abuse, he hasn't been able to get permanent clearance, security clearance, and he has been on interim clearance like so many other people in the White House. They've kept
like
him on
30 or 40, apparently.
Yep.
30 it's crazy.
Between 30 and 40 officials and political appointees are operating without permanent security clearances. Although I was reading that one political commentator was saying that the reason this, although it's unusual in a normal administration, what happens is you have people in other parts of government who are moved into these positions. So they already have existing clearances. They've been cleared before. It's not, but these are all, most of the, these are people who, in Trump's administration, who just haven't. They're just coming in from the business sector, from all kinds of places, never having gotten a clearance before. And then you have complicating factors like they're all shitheads, who, you know, either have, you know, really questionable ties or shady activity, you know, questionable business dealings, personal issues like this. But that's a lot of people to be hovering around the White House and documents and classified information.
Given that, at least nominally, the biggest issue of the election was, like, handling secure info.
Mm-hmm. Those emails.
God, it's just, history is not going to be kind to us.
Yeah, yeah.
So, are you using your Trump tax cut to hire more people this year? Hopefully you are. But if so, then posting your position to job sites and waiting for people to see it is not the way to go. ZipRecruiter knows that there's a better way, so they built a platform for people like you who are trying to find the right job candidates.
ZipRecruiter learns what you're looking for, they identify people with the right experience, and they invite them to apply for your job. And these invitations have revolutionized how people find their next hires.
In fact, for 80% of employers who post their job on ZipRecruiter, they find a quality candidate through the site in just one day.
And ZipRecruiter doesn't stop there. They even spotlight the strongest applications you get, so you never miss a great match.
The right people are out there for the job you're trying to hire for. ZipRecruiter is how you find them.
And right now, our listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/45. That's ZipRecruiter.com/45. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
I will say, though, in terms of like the vast amount of people in the White House without clearances, I think it's a good chance it comes back to Jared Kushner, because he can't get a clearance, despite a year of trying, and God knows I've been trying, he cannot get that clearance. And how is Trump or Kelly supposed to try and enforce this rule against others without enforcing against him? So it could be a situation, since Kushner gets a pass, they all get a pass.
Mm. Oh, I see what you're saying. That could be it, yeah. They can't have it both ways. Although I don't know. There's just no rules with these people. They have no ethics here. And evidence of that more is that Trump apparently last week was advised by his lawyers not to be interviewed by Mueller because...
But he really wants to talk to Mueller. He said it a million times.
He does, but his lawyers are they're actually concerned that he's going to make false statements and contradict himself, because he does that all the time.
Yeah.
And be charged with lying.
As a defense attorney, there is no way on God's green earth you let Trump talk to
him.
Oh,
no.
It just can't be done. Yeah. So they're making the right call. But also, to make that call, it's because Trump is a liar who mm-hmm. cannot tell the truth. Mm. So that's a huge deal in itself. So they cannot admit what everyone knows, which is why they're not going to let him talk to Mueller.
But Mueller can subpoena him. And apparently...
Yeah, but he'll ignore it. He'll deny it. He'll delay it. He's not going to speak to Mueller. His attorneys. It's okay. Again, if he can like escape his attorneys long enough and like run to Mueller's office and be like, "I want to tell you everything," then maybe it'll happen. But as long as his attorneys have time to interfere,
I think Mueller should try to DM him on Twitter.
He should. Oh my God, it'd be perfect. Like, he'd see it and be like, "I'll show my attorneys now. I'm going to talk to Mueller this way."
He hates being muzzled. He doesn't like being told what to do.
He thinks he can talk his way out of anything, so he wants to do it now.
Well,
but his attorneys,
it's work,
who
though, dude. It's
are often not competent, are competent at this point.
Well, whether or not he turns up, Steve Bannon is also at this point, I'm not showing up. He didn't show up to testify before a House Intelligence Committee hearing last Tuesday. There was a subpoena. His lawyer said, the White House said, they don't want him to testify beyond, like, a written questionnaire in which it's yes or no responses. So... You know, apparently Adam Schiff is saying that if Bannon continues to say, I think they gave him an extension, but if he doesn't come, they're going to commence contempt proceedings. And what that result in? Can you go to jail for that?
I mean, theoretically, it doesn't really happen. It
doesn't happen, right?
I mean, they have to go through a whole process, but I doubt they will because they're not in control of the majority. Mm. I will say Bannon was responsible this week for like probably one of the single most horrifying quotes or visual images I've had in my entire life.
What is that?
He said something about how he was glad to get out of the White House because he was like, quote, tired of being a wet nurse for a 71-year-old.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
I need ear bleach. Stop it.
Like, I kind of wonder if Bannon knows who wet nurse is, but he probably does and actually meant it that way. And I'm going to stop talking about this now because I can't handle the image.
Just shaking my head over here. Get it out of my brain. Okay. So we're going to go into... The other memo gate. This is kind of a big one, and I'm glad you're gonna go into depth.
Yeah, this is a big one. It's a kind of a lower key story, but in terms of like stuff that matters after Trump, this is a big one.
Yeah.
I mean, all this matters now. All this matters for the future. But like, this is one that's like a very critical precedent issue for the U.S. presidency. If you'll recall, back a million years ago in April, there was the strikes on Syria, airstrikes, like 59 Tomahawks, I forget the number. Tomahawks were in response to the use of sarin gas. And there are all the stupid people on TV who are like, oh, look, he's finally presidential. It's the day that Trump became president. But that's absolutely not true, because presidents only have limited powers. And whether or not he had the power to do the strike is, I don't want to say open question, because it's it's just not even been a question at all. Like, he's refused to address this problem, which is what constitutional power, which, like, source presidential authority, did he use to order the strike? Back in April, there was, like, at first, no response. And then, I think a day or two later, he released a statement that said, at approximately 8:40 p.m. on April 6, 2017, at my direction, U.S. military forces in the Mediterranean Sea, operating beyond the territorial sea of any state, struck the Shayrat military airfield in Syria. United States intelligence indicates that Syrian military forces operating from this airfield were responsible for the chemical weapons attack on Syrian civilians in southern Idlib province, Syria, that occurred on April 4th. I directed this action in order to degrade the Syrian military's ability to conduct further chemical weapons attacks and to dissuade the Syrian regime from using are proliferating chemical weapons, thereby promoting the stability of the region and averting a worsening of the region's current human catastrophe. He then goes on to say, I acted in the vital national security and foreign policy interest of the United States, pursuant to my constitutional authority to conduct foreign relations, and as commander-in-chief and chief executive. The U.S. will take additional action as necessary and appropriate to further its important national interest. Now, that's a long way of saying nothing at all. Yes, this was a... he can definitely argue this was an act pursuant to national security interests and foreign policy interests, but that's not justification for use of force. So there was, in May, a group called Protecting Democracy Now filed a FOIA for more info on like what legal basis they were actually invoking for doing this. And a judge agreed with them that they had to, produce it. And I think it was September, I can't remember now. They did get responses from several agencies, heavily redacted. Most of it was, like, totally redacted, and there was, like, one page of, like, praise for his Syria strike. Yeah.
Wow. And this is the memo that's supposed to outline the legal theory under which the president can act, and his
interpretation. Well, it was redacted, but it was listed as being produced as one of the redacted. So we know there's, like, 6 or 7 pages in there that is a memo on the legal basis for the strike. So enter Tim Kaine, who is still remembering this important fact that the president conducted a military action with no apparent constitutional basis and demanded that this quote, or he said, quote, the fact that there is a lengthy memo with a more detailed legal justification that has not been shared with Congress or the American public is unacceptable, which it is. So I don't know if he's not going to get it, but he is still following up on this. Yeah, this is scary that not only does Trump not explain why he did this military action, they wrote a memo on it and that can't be released, which, given his posture towards North Korea and Iran.
Yeah, so I mean, like, basically what we're talking about is, this administration's theory on, like, their interpretation of what Trump's presidential powers are in terms of using military force without any congressional oversight or authorization, right? But what my understanding of this kind of process is that it can't just be something that is internally decided by, like, Trump and maybe his close advisors. It has to be something. Doesn't this have to, like, go up to, like, you know, through DOJ and, like, and get, you know, approval? I mean, I understand that Jeff Sessions was briefed on it, but Jeff Sessions, as the U.S. Attorney General, should not just be briefed on it after, like, flipping Stephen Miller or somebody writes it.
This is an Article 1, Article 2 issue. The powers divided between them. There's no, like, court check here. There's no, like, overseeing. I mean, the only oversight is Congress, which has basically forfeited its oversight duties.
Right, but it is, the job of the Attorney General to advise the president on these kinds of legal issues. So, I mean, like, for him to be briefed on it versus actually being part of the process of, like, trying to interpret the law and how the president, you know, where the limitations of his power are, that's what I don't understand, how he could do that. Like, who wrote the memo is what I want to know.
Well, we don't know that. That part's also been redacted.
Yeah.
So it's hard to even, like, give an analysis of the explanation that he's given so far, because there really hasn't been an explanation. Maybe he's trying to argue that, like, that AUMF we've been using forever somehow covered this, but obviously, I mean, this was not on, like, any remote, no matter how far you extrapolate from the AUMF, you're not going to get to the Syrian government. This was not in, like, Al-Qaeda, this was not in ISIS, this was not in, like, some terrorist group. It was an attack on an airfield operated by the Syrian government. Mm-hmm. So if they are arguing that the AUMF covers that, that's insane, which they still might be doing, but who knows. I mean, there's not an apparent basis for it, and we don't even know the reasoning for why it was legal for him to do this.
So, but DOD has to follow the order of the commander in the chief, right? I mean, like,
yeah.
That's the thing.
Right now, that's why we're stuck here, because the only group organization that has the ability to check this is Congress, and they're not going to. So, in terms of other attempts by Congress to check, to the extent they can, Trump as executive, we've had another request this week, this time from Senator Wyden, for more records about a 2008 deal that Trump did. This one's been mentioned off and on since the election, but basic facts are that in 2004, Trump bought this, like, giant trashy mansion in Florida somewhere, and he bought it for, I think, $41 million, and then he couldn't sell it because it was way overpriced, and he paid too much for it to begin with. But then in 2008, right as Trump is, like, going through massive financial issues, being sued everywhere, I mean, financial crisis is happening, all of his buildings are failing, and this Russian, I'm gonna totally ruin this, but Rybo Lovilev, which is totally wrong, and I apologize to everyone, especially Russians. but he decided to buy it for the, you know, bargain sum of $95 million, which is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. There is no basis for this property being worth that amount of money. So Trump made us, like, you know, handy, what, $55 million profit on this deal, which came at a time he very much needed it. But the deal kind of stinks. The Russian oligarch never lived there. He was also going through divorce and trying to hide much of his wealth at the time.
Was this the same property you talked about, like, many episodes ago? I feel like you did, like, an in-depth dive on one of these kinds of property deals a long time ago.
Yeah, it's been a problem for him for a long time because it's just so shady. Like, there's no basis for, like, the prices thrown around. And Russian oligarchs aren't, like, in the habit of overpaying by that much.
Unless it's a Trump property, because we know they've been doing
that. Unless it's a Trump property and you need to launder a lot of money somewhere.
Right.
So, Senator Wyden has requested documents about that. And what the articles also mention is that apparently this is subject to Mueller's inquiry as well.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So apparently this is a part of the Russian investigation. Obviously it predates the election and all that, but I think there's a pretty good chance there was some money laundering going on here. Just a hunch. So maybe we'll get some answers finally about what went on with that deal.
And, you know, I mean, his wouldn't his sons also be implicated in that stuff? You know, because aren't they? I don't think they've only been involved with the Trump businesses, like, since the inauguration. Like, they were involved from beforehand, before that, too,
they
right?
They were. I don't know if they didn't all do all projects. Like,
okay.
some of them, like Eric has his deal in Uruguay. Ivanka likes the super shady ones, like in Azerbaijan. So they don't all do all the deals. I don't know if like Uday or Kuse were involved in the Florida mansion deal, but they may have been. And if not, they've been involved in plenty of other things too that I'm sure on Mueller's radar.
You know, one thing we forgot to talk about was the Winter Olympics began, and we made quite a show, quite a diplomatic show there with Vice President Pence showing up.
I'll admit, I've not been watching. I did see that apparently Pence has decided that now the sports are the perfect place to make political protests.
Well, to be fair, he has walked out of an NFL game from before, too, when players were kneeling during the anthem. So he actually likes to, he, for himself, believes that sports are an appropriate place to act out like a child. But if anybody else wants to use that opportunity to make a political statement, that's not appropriate for him. Yeah, so what Vice President Pence did apparently was he, you know, opening ceremonies, you have all the different teams walking in. The Korean team is a united team. It's North Korean and South Korean athletes that are competing as one united team. They walked in together and Pence refused to stand for them. He's also doing weird things like not making eye contact with like King Jong-un's sister and just odd stuff, you know, being like some reception where he refused to shake hands with the North Korean delegation. And
apparently he missed a planned state dinner. I did see that.
Oh, he missed it. Okay. Well, I mean, yeah, he's just, you know, and people, of course, paid attention. They're like, okay, well, if you're not going to stand for the North Koreans, what about the South Korean athletes? On top of which, I understand, I'm not saying that North Korea deserves necessarily any kind of deference or respect, but they're a totally murderous, terrifying regime. But these are, we're talking about athletes, right? We're talking about people, we're talking about North Korean people. We're not talking about the regime. They're athletes.
And also, isolating South Korea is not a particularly great strategy at this moment in time.
Yeah.
I mean, basically, yeah. Trump's, like, foreign and domestic policy, like, his one go-to move is to send Pence to sporting events to be a dick. Like.
I have some good news for our listeners. They can actually win a dinner with Trump, in case you guys missed it. Yes, it is so
what
easy.
What do I need to do?
All you got to do, Susan.
I really want some of that, like, plastic spoon caviar.
Right. Eat caviar from a plastic spoon. All you got to do is go to donate.donaldjtrump.com. If you don't make any donation to this man's campaign, you will be entered into a sweepstakes. Our president has a sweepstakes, okay? Just like any other clearinghouse. I mean, he has a sweep in which you will be automatically entered to win a dinner and photograph with him. You can get your picture. Now, Trump's campaign sent out an email saying, if you donate even a dollar, you'll be entered the sweepstakes. But if you go to the website, apparently $5 is the lowest you can donate. I'm guessing it will not cover your airfare and or your hotel stay at Mar-a-Lago. You'll probably have to pay for all that yourself and maybe even your dinner, but you'll get to have dinner with him. So those are just some disclaimers I'm going to add in there. But
like if I knew I'd get it, I'd happily pay donate $5 to the cause for that.
Yeah. But then what do you do? Well, you go there and then do what?
I would work on a strategy, but I'd be entertained.
Yeah. No, there are a lot of people who are like...
I get thrown out of Mar-a-Lago probably pretty quick.
Yeah. Well, you know, also, do you want to eat there? It's got like all these health code violations.
You know, I will at least try the chocolate cake. I'm not sure I'll touch anything else, but like, I got to know how bad that cake is or if it's really as beautiful as Trump has claimed.
You know, knowing his palate, I'm guessing it tastes like a lot. It's probably like a store-bought cake, you know, with like just...
That's probably why I'd eat it, because, you know, health code violations. So hopefully it's store-bought.
It's one of those really sugary cakes with extra chocolate sprinkles or something on him. But anyhow, I thought that was interesting. I just feel like I don't know. I guess his campaign can do this. This maybe does not violate the emolument stuff. But I also saw... I saw a news article that said that there is a judge who is open now to, because I think we talked about this briefly in the past, what's happened with a lot of the emoluments cases is that courts have found that there's no standing of private citizens or organizations to, I mean, it's only Congress that can act on violations of the emoluments clause, but apparently there's some judge now who is like open to the possibility of entertaining this. So let's see if anything comes of it, but I'm guessing it could get to the Supreme Court and then nowhere.
Probably one vote overruled by Gorsuch. So, well, that was this week's Trumpster Fire in full. And we'll be back next week to discuss everything new and chaotic and terrible that's happened since then.
Girl, we're going to have to talk about Infrastructure Week. It's going to be great.
Infrastructure Week. Yeah. Maybe we'll have a real Infrastructure Week. We can talk about like actual infrastructure, but I would not bet much money on that.
And fingers crossed the Dow doesn't continue to completely, you know, fall into space.
We forgot my favorite tweet from this week when he got mad at the Dow for...
Oh, he got mad at the Dow. I was like, what is happening? Yeah, I remember.
That was the most insane...
Do you have the tweet up? Wait. You should read it.
I'm going to pull it up because this one's still probably my favorite one. In the, quote, old days, when good news was reported, the stock market would go up. Today, when good news is reported, the stock market goes down. Big mistake.
I was like, what is he saying? I don't understand. Like, is he saying reporting good news is a mistake or the Dow is making a mistake?
He's saying that the market's making a mistake by not going up. Because that's definitely not how capitalism works.
All righty.
Yeah, Trump doesn't realize that. So.
All right. Sounds good. All right. Thanks so much, Susan. And we'll be back in 7 days with more Trumpster Fires.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. We have been produced by Long Arc Digital Media, and you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. And guess what? You can even leave us a voice message. Call us at 202-670-8345, and you never know, we might just play your message on the air. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.